You know, today's going to be a great show. I have Sal Edwards. She's the original founder, co-founder of Fleet Feet. And we're going to talk about a number of things, really how she built her business originally and had a nice exit with the franchise. It was, you know, incredible. Then we're going to talk about her new company, which is really a tech company all around our health. She has a wearable device. And, you know, this company that she's got, it's called Heart Zones. And you're going to, I think you're going to like it because we laugh a little bit and we get my heart rate up. I get a little amped up. So stick around. I think you're going to enjoy the show. We're going to talk about health, fitness, and of course, building a great company and some of her philosophies because she's had a ton of experience. She is one of the entrepreneurial gems in our region. Stick around, my friends. You know, today is a special day. I have Sally Edwards. She goes by Sal. She's a founder and CEO of Heart Zones, but she's much more than that. She really is an iconic entrepreneur and athlete and understands fitness in a way that a lot of us would love to understand. We're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking about her business and what it's done, but I'm also want to jump in because she has she's got a wealth of experience. So I think it's somewhere along the lines here, we're going to sort of tap into just what it's like to be Sally Edwards, and you know, which when you've built really successful companies, we always want to tap into that mindset of what keeps you going, why you know, when you've had a tremendous amount of success, sometimes it's time to take the foot off the gas pedal. And Sally, it doesn't seem like you are doing that. You are pressing. You've got this tech company. You've got me wired up to your Heart Zone monitor. And well, why don't we stop? I'll stop talking now, and maybe you can, your resume is so long, I'm not even going to start, so why don't you maybe give us a little bit of overview of who you are, and maybe a little bit about Heart Zones.
Well, that was a very good introduction, Mark. Thank you, and everyone who's listening. Yeah, I have a passion to get America fit, and I think when you keep that in focus, what your mission, passion, goal, objectives it is, we need a healthy America. We need a strong America. We need a fit America. And in my viewpoint, I'm 74 years old, and so I've had 7 decades to kind of look at trends and what's happening with the power of America. I think we're going in the wrong direction. Obesity continues to be a problem. Diseases of that, lifestyle diseases that are pretty manageable, could be happen if we would take personal responsibility for our health and we would invest in our health.
Mm-hmm. And so Heart Zones, so you founded Fleet Feet, which a lot of us know is a chain of it's an athletic shoe company, and you founded that, had a successful exit. You are a professional athlete. You've won so many races, written 26 books. So I want to make sure that our audience at the onset has a little bit of an understanding of what you've done in the past, so that when we listen to your opinion or the facts associated with this, we put this into context of who it's coming from.
Well, thank you, Mark. So, yes, I'm the co-founder of Fleet Feet, and we started that company when I was 28 years old, so it's a 45-year-old company now. I sold it after 17 years. I grew it from scratch. I like to start businesses from scratch. I've started 4 of them, sold 2 of them, and so I'm in a really interesting place because serial entrepreneurs tend to at some point age out. Mm-hmm. And I have absolutely can't even imagine that. There's more companies I'd like to get started than I have time to do. Mm-hmm. And so you have to wait time and return and investment in the most important thing I think we have, which is people. You know, it's I know a lot of entrepreneurs are very motivated by money and status. And I really care to make a difference in human lives. And so after I grew Fleet Feet, I franchised it. I took it to about $20 million in sales and sold it because I could look down the road and see I could sell more franchises. And Fleet Feet is really a unique company. I was talking to the CEO of Fleet Feet yesterday. The company's moved out of Sacramento, unfortunately. It was founded in Sacramento as a headquarters company here. And it was sad to see it depart, but he called and he said, you know, we're celebrating the 45th anniversary. And I thought, God, I was 28 years old. You can do the math. And we're going to do this legacy to you and the co-founder, Elizabeth Jansen. And so they've done a whole line of apparel that says 1976. And nice. It was founded at 24th and J Street in Midtown.
Wow.
And at the time in 1976, J Street and that area now called Midtown was poverty. And it was people sleeping on the streets and old Victorians that were boarded up and nobody had. And I think the renaissance of Midtown, I don't personally take credit. I think it started with Fleet Feet. An upscale retailer moves in, changes the culture of the town, brings in healthy people. And I can remember when we opened on June 1st, 1976, a lot of people said, this is never going to make it. You've done everything wrong. You're in a bad location. You're in an old beat up Victorian. You're selling something nobody wants, running shoes.
Well, in the 70s, so I am a little bit younger than you. I'm 58, but I do remember a running craze began in the 70s. I began running, I think, as a 12-year-old in the middle of the 70s. And, I mean, it took off. And you were right at the heart. You're a pioneer in the running industry.
Yeah, I have been a pioneer in a number of different industries. And I think one of the things entrepreneurs tend to do is we tend to think this is going to happen right now. And I'm frequently asked, you know, what are some of the messages that you have? And I think one of the messages is about endurance. I think we need that endurance quality in so many parts of patience and willingness to go through the really difficult highs and lows of business, of putting belief in. And I think Fleet Feet probably, I was 20 years too early, but most of the companies that I founded are 20 years too early.
All right. So let's, so you have this vast experience. You even talked about being in Vietnam in the Red Cross. Okay. I want to know, like, toughest situation you've been in your life, and then maybe the biggest win story, if you can think of that. If you can think of one that, like, stands out.
Sure. So I did. I volunteered. I went to the University of California at Berkeley, UC Berkeley, in the late 60s. And, there were student riots and strikes and, you know, the anti-Vietnam War. And then I'm going to Vietnam, volunteering to go and serve my country. I'm a real patriot of America. I really believe in our country and that we need to do the right thing. And we have not always done the right thing as a nation. But I'll stay on track.
Yeah, but if each of us does something, then together we're going to be a better country.
Yeah. It's if each of us would do that and would take responsibility beyond greed and self-interest and a lot of things that I've seen in the last 10 years that, you know, that have really changed our culture. But after I left Vietnam, I came back to America. You know, I was 25 years old without any money in a Volkswagen car and needed a quick job. So I taught school for 2 years in Sacramento. And after teaching school for several years, I decided I was, and maybe Mark, you've experienced, I was a round person trying to get into a square hole, and the fit just wasn't there. And I realized at some point you need to just be in charge.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a team player, but you look around and sometimes it's you that needs to be in charge.
Correct. Yeah. The rest of the team wants to follow. And I have a philosophy about that as well. But, and so I said to my high school best friend, I said, you know, would you be interested in starting a small business? And I'm an athlete and I play tennis and I run and I, you know, like team sports. And she said yes. And so it was a novel thing for two women to go into the sporting goods industry in the 1970s because, the message really, even in the 70s, is, the feminist movement was starting and empowerment for women and equal rights. And those things were starting to happen. And then I started running long distance. And when you start running, you know, and I, like other people, I started at a mile and, you know, then ran 10 miles, then ran 20 miles, then ran 50 miles, then ran 100 miles. You it was a test of how far the human body could go. And I really enjoyed that experiment and started writing about it and wrote some of the very, very, very first books ever on how to train, particularly for endurance sports, not for strength training or flexibility or, you know, motor coordination, and set up a system called zone training. I invented zone training, and zone training is now very popular, and you put on a wearable device and you go do things and you get into your zone, and I have a master's degree in exercise physiology, so put the science behind methodology, and heart zones is the result of that.
Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about heart zones. We're going to come back to a couple of highs and lows. Okay, I'll give you a chance to think about that. We'll come back to that toward the end of the show. Now, you and I right now are wearing heart zone wearable device where we're able to track our heart rate. And I know it does a lot more than that, but maybe you can share a little bit about the company and then what are we tracking here? Why am I wearing this thing that looks like a really cool watch?
We are wearing it because we're doing something called data-driven fitness. So data-driven fitness is rather than just going out and guessing how hard I'm going or how far or how long or how... I do better. Not everybody. I do better when I have data. And so when I was doing one of my Ironmans, I've done 16 Ironmans and set a couple world records. But anyway, I would wear
a couple wins we can come back to at the end of the show. An Ironman. Okay, so I want to make sure people, for the casual listener, an Ironman is basically you swim, a couple miles?
2.4.
Then you bike a long way.
112.
And then you finish out with a marathon.
Yeah,
just to wrap it up with 26.2 miles. Yeah. So, okay.
So I was the third or fourth woman to ever finish an Ironman.
And oh, my God.
At those, during those
Why
days.
Why do they call it an Iron Person?
Right. It has to do with trademarks. I would just go as hard as you can. And,
okay.
And when you go without, what's called a perceived exertion, I'm feeling how hard it is. Your feelings change from day to day.
Okay.
But your heart's telling you the truth. And you want the truth, and you want to do it right. And I'll keep saying, let's do things right. And so the very first wearable device that really was ever made was a heart rate monitor in the early 1980s. And I wrote the first book on how to train. And I did that because Fleet Feet was the first athletic footwear store in California, one of the first in America. People didn't even know what an athletic shoe store was in 1976. And I would watch people, buy, at that time they were $450. I mean, they're still $450, but you can buy them a lot less expensive.
A pair of shoes was $450?
No, a heart rate monitor.
Oh, a heart rate monitor. Okay, I'm
sorry.
Yes.
First heart
okay,
monitor.
Heart rate monitor, yeah.
And so there weren't a lot of people who were going to spend $450,
right.
But I wanted to try out for the Olympics. In the first time women were allowed, which was ridiculous, to run in the Olympics was in the 1984 Olympics. So you had to be one of the fastest 200 women in America to go to the trials to qualify.
The first time a woman could run in the Olympics was 84?
The marathon distance.
The marathon, okay, because I remember sprints and stuff like that
right.
as a kid.
They could run 3,000 meters.
I didn't realize
before.
They couldn't run a marathon before that. Okay, anyway, I keep going. Sorry, I keep interrupting you. This is a good history lesson for me.
Oh, no, but you're interested, so that's good. So I put on a heart rate monitor, and I trained and trained, and I created zone training, and I I PR'd, which is how fast can you go? And it wasn't.
Your personal record.
Yes. So I ran 2 hours and 50 minutes, but the woman, Joan Benoit Samuelson, who won the trials, because the top three women go to the Olympics, she ran that in 2 hours and 20 minutes. So she beat me by a good 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And she did then go on and win the gold medal. And she's that was incredible to be win the gold medal the first time, and it was an American woman mm-hmm. in the Olympics. But I wore a heart rate monitor. And the reason to, in that point, was to, if I could stay in this little tiny heart rate number, I knew I would not slow down.
Okay.
And that's the whole idea. You want to do what's called even splits. So the first half, you want your speed to be the same as the second half, and it's really hard to do because you're just using a stopwatch. That's all we had was a stopwatch.
Right, but you can check your heart rate or your monitor, and you know how to keep those splits more even.
Correct, yeah. Correct. And so I decided I had a secret weapon that no one else had and that I would do better because I knew how to train. Because of my academic and background, I knew about using data, which is really key to doing better. And then I knew how to mentally perform. So it takes a lot of, it's not just one thing. You had to have, you know, it has to be a good day as well. And so that was one of my highlights. There have been a number of them, though. So picking out one's hard to do.
So now this this information that you built for yourself, right, the system you built for yourself has now, several years later, turned into a very significant company. Maybe I know you're in a lot in schools. Your product is used in fitness gyms. Individuals use your heart rate monitors and your wearable device. I should call it. How are lives changing? And what am I going to find out with this thing? The one I'm wearing right now, and the one you're wearing too, as we compare.
Yeah, so we both have donned a heart rate sensor, and it's on our forearm. And you push one button, and you pop up on either a mobile device, your phone, or in this case, a group software. And so I'll give you a couple of examples. Here in Sacramento, Mercy Hospital has purchased our technology for their muscular dystrophy rehab center. So it's used in healthcare, and it helps people with muscular dystrophy. They have a hard time gauging their effort, how hard they're going.
Okay.
So that's the disease population. We just sold a heart zone system to a company in Arizona that trains people to climb utility poles. And you think, why would you want to know how to, why? Because you want to be able, these are really tall, you know, utility poles, 150, 200 feet with those, you know, wires with all that electricity in them. And so the trainer can stand on the ground, have 15 guys and gals climbing up these fake utility poles to train them how to do that for safety. But also it measures anxiety, because when you get at heights, it can be kind of scary up there.
Right.
All the way to where we're working with kindergarten kids in schools, and we're teaching and they love colors, and all they want to do is be in the red zone, which is...
So yeah, you think about it, we talked a little bit about the school example of the athlete that doesn't have to try as hard in PE because he or she is gifted, they just have talent, and then you have the other athlete in PE who is less gifted, maybe even overweight, or you know, not as in good a physical condition, and how we measure for grading purposes, how much should we put into effort, right? If your heart rate is up, obviously you're putting in an effort. If your heart rate is low, well, you're not really even trying that hard. So become first place, because you came in first, if it was easy, should you get the same grade as somebody who is busting their butt? They're just not in quite as good a shape.
Yeah, and you know, we're all gifted with different things, and that athlete that's gifted that just loves physical education has a difficult time in the sense that they want to win all the time and they want to be first. But really what first should be is the person who gave the most effort, who tried their hardest, and we have some limitations, our DNA. And you know, you ought to thank your parents for the gifts that they gave you, and that's, you know, and I thank my parents, they're both passed away, but you know, I have three older brothers, and somehow I got most of the athletic talent and was able to use that in ways that we can make a difference in so many ways.
I mean, and that's a lot like entrepreneurship too. It really, you could have all the talent in the world, if you don't have the work ethic and the staying power, you're going to be a lot more successful if you've got the work ethic and staying power than having the natural talent.
Yeah, and the inclination, and now we will shift over. Entrepreneurship is a lot about risk and willingness to take risk. And I think you, Mark, know that, and have experienced it yourself because you're an entrepreneur, that we don't see risk the same way as other people. We don't see it like, oh, I'm going to lose my house and all my money and my fame or whatever. I just look at it like, oh, isn't this going to be fun, and mm-hmm. it's going to fit my mission, and I want to help people, and service is a big, it's a really big word in my life, is service. And so starting businesses that can make a difference is what I've always loved to do.
What kind of, so you want to get America in better shape. That is, we need it, of course. Is there something, do you want to do that because you can, because you've got the capability to make a real impact? Or what really inspires you about that? Sometimes it's like, because I can, I must, or I should. It's like the moral, your moral obligation, if you're good at something and you can help others, to really pass it along. Does it come from that standpoint? Or do you really want to see Americans more athletic?
I think it comes with your purpose in life.
Okay.
And if I could turn the tables, and I'll give you a chance to think your purpose in life.
Okay.
My purpose in life, I think in large part, is to connect my heart, which is the most important muscle we have in our bodies, with mission and why I'm here on the planet. And I think that's really hard. People ask me, Sally, you keep coming up with different kinds of things. I founded a women's triathlon series that went on for 21 years. We had 600,000 women do their first triathlon. I go, Sally, why do you want to finish last in every single one of these trials? So I volunteer to be the final finisher. I do that because I go to my heart and I say, heart, what is it that really matters to you? What is the connection piece to what gets you up every day? And mm-hmm. and in the triathlon series that we did, which I did 150 last place finishes, so I went from first place to last place. It was a really interesting transition. I knew that the hardest place in a race is being last. And so if somebody else would volunteer to be the final finisher, then others will say, oh, that's the most embarrassing place. Sally will do that. And tens of thousands of women turned out if they would not be last.
Wow.
And so you connect to that emotional piece, that heartfelt piece of why we're here, how can we help people, what can we do? Which leads me to turning to that question, because you've started a number of businesses, and the one that we're doing now. Why do you do it?
Well, I think it's I wanted to do something. I think I wanted to be a professional football player, and one thing stopping me, athletic ability. But so I wanted. I think I've always wanted to do something important, regardless of what that was. But what am I good at? I need to kind of, as a smaller guy, as a smaller athlete, I need to do something that I can sort of parlay, something that I might have a little bit of ability in. So I think that's where I came up with, I enjoyed creating opportunity in my old businesses and having seen people buy their first house and that kind of thing. So it's like, wow, really is cool to, if you have a growing company, it creates opportunity. And so after selling my companies, I still wanted to do something important. I had been a football coach. Am I going to go coach football? Because I was pretty good at that. It makes an impact, I think, and it's important. It was going to be high school football. Or am I going to focus on the small business? Because I wanted to do something where I thought I could be helpful and successful and do something really important. So I chose the business route, and I think it really was to create opportunity. And my thing is, how do I create opportunity that's sort of uncommon, right, that most people would not think about? Oh, I'm getting excited. My heart rate. You look at my talking about myself, and look at my heart rate. I'm in the red zone now because I'm talking about myself. Awkward.
Oh, you're excited.
But I want to create opportunity, and I love being around people that are ambitious. So it's sort of fun. I had a little success in entrepreneurship. So hey, why not sort of parlay that experience or success you know, maybe that's where I'll find my best ability to make an impact.
So what I heard, I'm going to play it
back.
What I heard is that you thought. So what we tend to do as Americans mostly is we get in our head and we think and think and think. And if we can connect our head to our heart and we can start with our heart, you know, what is it I feel? What is it that draws me to something and attracts me? What is it that when I do that, my heart rate goes to right now 120. Yours is 100.
Mine's still 122.
Sitting there beats a minute. That's
I was at but by the way, 122. I was at 60. I was kind of at 65 while I was listening, and then I start talking about myself or about what things I'm passionate about, and it almost doubles. Which is kind of interesting.
Right. So I'm going to suggest that you direct yourself more to your heart. Take right now, even take a deep breath of air. And I know you meditate, so I know you know about biofeedback and managing your emotions and the process of recovery. And there are now athletic studios that do nothing but recovery because we are in our sympathetic nervous system, which means we're usually on high energy, moving around.
I'm at 65 right now.
Good job. That was recovery.
So you're telling me, just take a breath, Mark. I almost, I wouldn't cuss on the show. I have grandchildren. I don't want anybody to hear that. But I almost, was out of line there. But because I can't believe it went down so that fast.
Yeah, that was
half.
That was so that was remarkable, by the way. So you can imagine monitor your emotions and manage them, and that's what we're trying.
And I do attribute that to meditation and yoga and things like that. The learning to breathe is for anybody listening. Learn to breathe.
And breathe in a way that's relaxing and recovery. So, so I encourage, and I, in particular, and this is not a gender thing, but men tend to be that more of a combative, more of a hard driving. I'm going to use these analogies of sports and football and apply them to business. And the softer side, which is the direction and trend of American business today, is to bring more compassion, empathy, understanding, respect, appreciation, collaboration into our business world. And I would love to see more and of that way of running a business, a successful business.
So your business, is that how you're working on your business? Describe a manager's meeting or a how it might be different than, the way I might pound my fist to my teammates. I don't do that, do I, Scott?
But no, you don't swear either, do you, Mark? And your heart rate is going up as you're pounding your fist.
Talking about myself again.
Yeah. You asked about a manager's meeting. So in a manager's meeting, everybody in ours respect is just you have to earn trust, but respect is something that everyone has. So, and we also believe in the world of heart zones. And there, it's a company of about 15 employees. It's not, and we're doing a couple $1 million in sales, and it's growing at a really nice 25% rate. Then the pandemic hit, but now we're back, which is really nice. The federal government has stepped in, which is wonderful during this pandemic, and kept our economy growing and healthy. And God, I imagine being at the throttles of those gears that you can pull on inflation and interest rates and trying to stay a course so that our businesses can be healthy. The health club industry has taken a pretty rough hit. 22,000 health clubs have now closed permanently across America in the last 18 months. But schools, so it's nice in business to be in a multi-channel business, so you're not reliant always on one customer or one sector of business. And the school business is phenomenally, and I think a lot in the, and so you go to where your customers are at the moment. A lot of it has to do with, in coaching and physical education, there are some young high energy, we're going to do it different paradigms that are going on. And we're not going to be so sports oriented. Schools are moving to sports after school being more, and fitness and health being an emphasis in school physical education. And that's what our HeartZones technology really provides. It really provides a way to motivate and engage kids to love physical education. And we need that.
We do need that, yes. Well, let's talk about being fit, if you don't mind, because, you know, we only have so much time. I think we have plenty of time to bring up another subject or two, but you and I are aging. You're an aging athlete. I am. We're all aging, but at 58 and 74. But you're still really active. You know, you got to come up. People have to come up the stairs to get up in into the podcast studio in my office. And invariably, when people walk up the steps, they're breathing hard. And you came up the steps, and we just went right into a conversation, which is uncommon. I waited for you to sort of catch your breath, but we got right into the conversation. I'm sitting behind my desk over there. I'm relaxed, and my heart zone's probably at 60, 65. You just walked up the stairs, and no problem. You're in great shape, obviously.
Yeah, well, I believe in something called 365 fit. And so 365 fit means that 365 days out of the year, I am going to be so fit that when Mark Haney calls me on the phone and says, "Hey, Sal, let's go snowshoeing," I'll say, "Great, I'm 365 fit. How many hours do you want to go for?" Or you say, "Let's go play racquetball," or "Let's go run 5 miles." Or 365 fit means every day out of the year, I am going to stay fit. And as you were saying, as we age, it's hard. I've done some of the hardest races in the world. And being like yourself, a goal-oriented individual, you know, I've, you know, done all of ultra marathons and adventure races and race your bike across America as fast as you can. You know, you kind of run out of what's the next thing. Mm-hmm. And so 365 fit is that my goal is every single day I'm going to be fit enough that when Mark Haney calls me, I'll say, "Sure, let's go ride our bike to Auburn or wherever."
Well, I love it. I want to get into your routine, but just to make sure that our audience can understand the contrast between me and you, you and me, you are an adventuresome fitness person. I am actually very lazy, and so I have these little routines that I do because, and then so you're walking the Pacific Trail, right, from Mexico to Canada. You know, that's 2,600 miles. You're doing 100 miles per year. You got to do it over a 26-year period, but you're sort of taking on the adventure. Go for a bike ride. Mark calls me. It's like I am more of the person that says, my routine is my routine. I'm so lazy. If I break my routine, I'll be off track. I do want to be in shape 365 days a year, but less adventuresome. It's kind of interesting contrast.
But why, Mark?
I don't know. It's probably fear, insecurities of some kind.
Well, so part of the reason I told you the story about hiking 100 miles a year for 26 years and finishing the Pacific Crest Trail is because I want to challenge people as we age to keep setting those goals and keep raising that bar and keep, because the other way is, isn't aging painful and horrible?
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's really, really great because you're not doing those stupid things you used to do, like, you know, beat yourself up as hard as you can and compete and, you know, win this race and do that.
So as a 58-year-old, when did that, I'm probably still beating myself up. I never did the, you know, I was not as good of an athlete as you or even close, but, you know, I like to go to CrossFit. I like to go to yoga. I still sort of, you know, I'm talking to my wife today. I've kind of gotten off track a little bit this last week and I'm got to get back on track. So today I'm back. With that said, my heart rate's going up again.
You're just going into the red zone,
deep
Mark.
Breath. With that said, when did that change for you? Because I think there's still a lot of us that are maybe beating ourselves up, and we haven't matured to the point where we can go, okay, let's take this, let's be a little more practical. Because we're going to live longer, I really believe that, you know, changing our environment and challenging ourselves in different ways, then that's good for us.
So, Mark, I really like CrossFit, and it is functional fitness, and it's really hard. Mm-hmm. If you don't like being in the red zone, which you're continued escalating,
yeah,
you get excited.
I love the red zone personally, yeah. Which is like kind of like a sick. They call it embrace the suck in CrossFit.
Yeah.
You sort of want that. You get it. Yeah. I'm almost maybe a little addicted. Give me a little bit of that every day.
Yeah.
Not too much, a little bit.
Yeah. And so in fitness and the way the human body works, it does not want to be in the red zone every day. It doesn't want to be there emotionally. It doesn't want to be there metabolically. So it metabolically means the sum of all the calories that we burn. Really, the body really wants moderation. And this yellow zone, so there's blue, yellow, and red. This
right.
moderate zone is golden. It's wonderful. It's sustainable over long periods of time. You don't get injured. It's hard enough that you're burning a lot of calories, so it really helps. I wrote a book on using your heart rate monitor for weight loss because mm-hmm. this obesity epidemic, largely caused by sedentary activity. Americans are sitting on their ass all day, and we need to get up and move. And yet, if we say, let's go red, we get injured, burned out, stale, and hate it. You're not one of those people. But
right.
what I see CrossFit and what I want to encourage you to do is use it for what it was meant for, functional fitness.
Yeah.
And now set a goal of that's my foundation. I am strong, I'm coordinated, I'm fit, I have endurance. What am I going to do with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, good question. So one of the things that I see with a lot of CrossFitters is sometimes they lack flexibility and certain things like that. And, you know, the mobility piece, I think, is, you know, it's a recipe for an injury if you're doing CrossFit. So because of my aging and not wanting to be injured doing CrossFit, I've introduced a very serious mobility practice where I do over to my right over there, there's all kinds of foam rollers and all that. I have every contraption known to man in terms of like foam rolling and stuff so that I can prove my flexibility so I do not get injured. But I feel like some of the, you kind of have to do things that are fun, right? So CrossFit, the one good thing about CrossFit for me is there is a little bit of a competitive factor
yeah.
that brings out the fun aspect of it for me. And I know other people sort of feel like that too. So exercising in a way that's fun, I think is kind of helpful for some personalities.
Yeah. And I,
or competitive, CrossFit, it's always fun.
So what you're saying is you're doing CrossFit to be a better CrossFitter.
I'm doing CrossFit. My vision is to be the fittest 85-year-old man in the region. I've got about 27-28 years to get there, but it's kind of like I'm going to do it over time. I'm not in this mass rush, but I don't want to get injured. I want to get in a little bit. I want to have year-over-year improvement, and I want to sort of test that. Can a human, right, get year-over-year improvement until what point in terms of physical fitness? So starts with not being injured.
Yeah, and
do you believe that there's a? I mean, each one of us is different for sure, but we know that there are people that can. I mean, look at yourself. You're in great shape, and you're 74. We know there are people that sort of hang it up and say, "I'm on the gradual decline." Have you said that to yourself? I'm on the gradual decline, so just keep it going. Or are you looking for improvement?
So the best way I know to answer that question is called Don't Let the Old Woman In. And it is a Clint Eastwood song, actually.
Okay.
You can go to YouTube.
Don't let the old woman
yeah.
in.
Yeah, and in your case, don't let the old man in.
Okay.
And so if you let your mind say, oh, I'm going to get older, I'm going to get worse, you've just let the old man in.
Uh-huh.
And if you say your mind, nope, I'm not going to let I'm not going to let that old woman in. I'm actually probably in the middle of middle age. I'm 74.
Mm-hmm.
And so you qualify as a discount as a senior for this, and you're called that. And I went through the airport yesterday, and they gave me this little blue ticket as I'm going through TSA. And I said, how come I'm getting a blue ticket? And they said, well, if you're over 75, you get a blue ticket because you don't have to take off your shoes.
Oh boy!
And I looked at them. I said, "I can take off my shoes."
74, man. Come on.
Thanks.
Who are they hiring here in TSA?
Yeah. Thanks for the ticket. Yeah. But I'm not going to let the old woman in.
Show some manners, too, young person.
Yeah. And I want to. So a lot of it is your mental attitude. And if your mental attitude is, "Hey, I'm going to be middle aged until I'm 85," which is what I recommend that you. Then maybe I'll kind of look at that aging of. And sure enough, your performance is physiologically. Things happen. For example, our brains dry out and they shrink, and you have more room so you can go to higher altitudes, which is great. You have they're like you're saying. You've mentioned injury in this conversation a lot.
Well, I think that's a lot of isn't that common? You think about it, we had a Saint Bernard, and they told me Saint Bernards die early because they earlier than others, maybe smaller dogs, because getting in and out of cars and so on, it's just hard on the body and so on. And so I thought, you know, to me, we're going to get injured. And that's probably what's going to slow us down. Because if you fall down and you can't get back up, you know, you're probably not going to make it too long.
Are you going to have more injuries by not moving than by moving? So you're by doing CrossFit, you're lowering your risks of injury. You're stronger. Your connective tissue's in better shape. Your heart and lungs can function better. So you're doing the right thing. And yeah, there's going to be things that trip us up. We're gonna, you know, we're gonna have a this and a that, and you know, but the risk of injury is much higher if you're not fit.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay. I had never heard that before, but it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I think rather than, we become what we focus on. So if we focus on the fear of injury, then there's more of a chance that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And if we focus on not letting the old man in and not focusing on aging, and we focus on fitness and health and strength and proprioception and all those kinds of things, your energy level is going to be as high as ever. Your ability to be creative and mentally sharp. And those are the kinds of things, and people say, "Hey, Sal, when are you going to retire?" And I look at them, I laugh. Retire. Life is meant to be lived to the fullest, not to retire from life.
Yes, yes. Hear, hear. I love that attitude, philosophy. I like that way of thinking. And I think a lot of I wonder sometimes how unique it is. Maybe you can tell me that, because you're my friends. They aren't quite, some of them are retiring, but they haven't really retired from a life yet. Most of them, you know, people in their 50s. And it is common though that I'm running around with entrepreneurs and I'm the oldest person in the room. It's like, oh, this is awkward. I'm the oldest person here. You probably run into that obviously more than I do. But do you find that your attitude toward staying young for a 74-year-old is that normal? Or is that abnormal?
So tomorrow I've been asked to be keynote to an event, and it's by the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've been on there. I've spoken with those guys a few times. Yeah.
Yeah. And I...
We're going to big time getting you on there, huh?
and I said, well, like, how many people are coming and who are they? And they said, oh, they're mostly in their 20s. They're mostly, they want to know how you did it, Sal. Mm-hmm. And so really that's what we want you to talk about, which I kind of laugh, because you can be an entrepreneur at any age. You can start a business at any age. And I think if you can take that experience you've had in whatever workplace you are and say, gee, I really am drawn by my heart, not my head. To do something that is fits me, and start a small business out of your home or wherever at any age, and not think that entrepreneurs are all in their 20s. It's a myth. It's not true. Over these last 5 decades I've been in business, I've about every 10 or 15 years, I kind of get one, grow it, sell it, start one, grow it out of, you know, garage. And, you know, and you get to a point where, you know, finally you have enough money. You don't have to put up your house and go to banks and get your family and friends. It's really rewarding.
Do you ever think, so people sometimes ask me, Mark, you know, I've got a lot of businesses, I've got a lot of things going, and I put people in my life that help me to do this. So yes. I'm not doing it myself. But they often question, we question each other about stress and dealing with stress. And one of the things that I've often thought was that I deal with stress better than some, not better than everybody, but better. I deal with stress better than I would if I didn't exercise. I think the exercise for an entrepreneur, which is a stressful job by nature, if we don't exercise and stay fit, for me at least, I would be more stressed out. And I'm wondering about that for you. You described the way you've built the businesses and the risk and all that kind of stuff, and it's nothing to me and you. How much of that is because you work out?
Oh, I think I contribute a lot. I contribute a lot to having a balanced life.
Yeah.
And I watch entrepreneurs get addicted to their business. And they are proud they spent 15 hours a day working hard and moving ahead and, you know, doing the heavy lifting. And I laugh at them and I say, you know, you would do much better if you would get a more balanced life, if you'd eat well, if you'd sleep well, if you'd exercise well, if you'd have, and not in the right order, but your family and friends, right?
Yeah.
But there is this impression that everybody is going to be the next billionaire, and they're mostly driven people that don't have a balanced life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what is the purpose of our life? And you can ask the Dalai Lama or anyone else. It's to find happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure you find happiness that way.
Yeah, interesting. I think being happy along the way, you know, if you just keep putting it out there, I'm not happy now, but I'm on my way to happiness. it seems like a sad way to live your life. I mean, I sometimes can't go to sleep at night because I'm excited about the next day, right? And that's, a lot of people have trouble sleeping. And sometimes it's because, for me, I'm excited about tomorrow because I've got some cool stuff I'm going to be doing tomorrow. I feel like every day should be happy.
Yeah, and I think you have a better shot at that because there's a lot of misery in this world and there's a lot of sadness and disappointment. And if you can always, like we're saying, put the positive light on, do the right thing so you can sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
And usually doing the right thing is harder to do than the easy thing.
Yeah, it can be, huh?
Yeah, and it takes more time and it takes more ethics and morality and willingness to share in the good, and being generous and kind and charitable, all of those kinds of virtues and values sometimes get left out of business. And I think when you put that together and you motivate and engage your team, because we do better typically in business when we, and I think you're a very team-oriented kind of business guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you share the wealth. And the wealth isn't just money. It's the experience, the opportunities, because you use the word opportunity a lot. I think you do better as a leader.
I agree. We have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure I circle back for our audience because we heard one of your high points as you were, you know, building out your first fitness monitoring concept. As you built that out, that sounds like it was an epiphany or a moment when you're trying out for the Olympics. But what describe a low point, because I think a lot of times a low point can really be almost a place where we do like a turnaround. There's a turnaround story after the low point, because obviously look what you're doing now. So you didn't stay down, but every one of us has gotten knocked down.
Yeah. So I decided to enter a race that's from Squaw Valley to Auburn called the Western States 100 mm-hmm. Mile Endurance Run. And the first year that I did that, I finished third. And I did it with a friend, and I learned a lot. And I think you do sometimes, the first time you do something, that's the whole reason you do it, whether you win or lose or go broke or whatever. And the second time, I decided I would train to win the race. And I did.
You won it.
Yeah, and I set a course record. It was a world record. And
wow.
I decided that the third year that I would come back and do it again. And I had, at this point, a nemesis. I had a woman who finished just behind me the year that I won. And the two of us did not like each other very much.
Why?
She stayed at home. She was a mom, you know, raising kids. I'm out trying to make a difference in the world and helping people. It was quite... I'm sure she helped people, but
I'm sure she helped her family.
Yeah.
But there was an adversarial relationship.
There was.
Okay.
And the ABC News followed us and did a documentary on two women running across
the
Sierra.
That'll set up the adversarial, the nemesis piece.
Yeah. And the last time, so we passed each other during the race, seven or eight times. And every time she passed me, she would say, "Oh, isn't it hot out here?" "Yeah, it's 105 degrees. You know, you've just run 60 miles. You don't walk, you run these races." And then I would pass her and I'd say, "God, what a great day." So it was like this clash of the negative and the positive, the two different lifestyles, two different women, two different kinds of athletes, both of us very experienced and both of us wanting to win. And you get to this river crossing called Rucky Chucky, and it was getting dark, and I saw her, and there's a rope that goes across because it's really a swift American river, and you're tired, you're 70 miles into the race, you're holding on to the rope. I see her getting out on the other side. I'm getting into the river crossing, and you run through the night, and I didn't know where she was, and she didn't know where I was. And when I crossed the finish line, I finished second. Not the worst place to be, not the worst time. And I always hug my pacers. And finally, you get a chance. One thing I want to do was take off my shoes, because your feet are killing you after running 100 miles. Yeah. And, you know, you got blisters and they're bleeding. But anyway, but it's joyous, as hard as that may sound. And she came over to me and she said, "Sally, I want to thank you, because without you, I would not have been able to beat you by an hour and a half." So she dropped the record by over 2 hours, and I dropped the record as well. But what I learned is your nemesis is your best friend, and you need your competitors. You need to understand them. You need to respect them. You need to do your best. Hmm. And she taught me that lesson.
Oh, what a great lesson on a tough moment, in some ways, glorious in others, but a learning experience comes out of it. Wow. Thank you. Well, I want to give you a chance to share, because we dove into your business, but we talked a lot about kind of, you have an interesting, a very special way of having a conversation where you turn it back to me instead of it being a one-way set of me firing questions at you. You're getting me to talk about myself. You're a gifted conversationalist. But I want to bounce it back over to you to make sure that we cover anything else that we might want to cover regarding your business, regarding philosophies, anything really, because I want to make sure that this is, this is on your terms.
Well, thank you, Mark. And you're a gifted interviewer as well, even though your heart rate just went into the red again. So what we're doing is we have a display of heart rate, and Mark is looking at his heart rate at 109 beats a minute, and mine is a little bit lower. But I think the message that I really keep saying over and over again, and it came from a race I did in Japan. I was racing an Ironman in Japan. And it was a 11 hour race. So these are really long races, and you just go as hard and as high a heart rate as you possibly can. And it rained, and I'm on my bike. And when it's raining on your bike, your hair's drooping, and you get mud all over you, and you look horrible. And the Japanese people were lining the course, and they kept yelling this word, "Fido." Fido. And I love, like, you have a St. Bernard, I have a little Queensland Heeler, I love dogs. And Fido, it was Japanese. I didn't know what it meant. And I'm riding my bike and racing as hard as I can and, trying to win. And there's prize money on the table. And the race finished in a 15th century castle. And you ran over a moat and into the castle. And in the middle of the castle was a baseball diamond. The Japanese are crazy about baseball, so even in the castles, they're putting their baseball diamond. And the finish line was home plate. And so after the race was over and I finished second, and I, you know, that's good. It's really good. I'll take it, right? This interviewer came up and said, tell me about the race. And I said, well, there were these two things that happened that I don't quite understand. And one was the crowd was yelling Fido. And I said, well, maybe that means I'm in second place because I don't want them to think I'm a dog looking muddy and wet and all of that. And she goes, no. To a Japanese, Fido means to fight. And so they're yelling, you know, to fight. And I said, well, you know, I've spent a year in a war zone as a young woman, and fighting is a little hard for me. I come from a military family, and my dad was in World War II, and this whole thing about fighting. And she goes, no. Fighting to a Japanese means to fight against what's inside you that keeps you from doing your best.
Hmm.
So I think the message is we should ask people to do their best. Mm-hmm. And when it comes up like, oh, I'm going to take the easy route or the short route or the fast route or the money route or whatever route, that you fight against those urges and you constantly lead by doing your best.
Do your best. Wow. So so simple, but so true. Sally Edwards, Heart Zones, entrepreneur, professional athlete, world record holder, founder of Fleet Feet, joining me today. I am so grateful that you joined me. I learned my heart rate is now lower than yours, but I got it down. I'm doing my breathing. Thank you very much for teaching us all and helping us all to think a little bit differently about the way we approach business and fitness.
Thank you, Mark, and may the Mark Haney Show grow and become an international, listened by hundreds of thousands of people.
Aw, thank you very much. Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. You know, Sal Edwards is a true gem, and after the show, we were talking about, you know, just what it's like to get a little bit older. So there's probably a lot of young people out there thinking, you know, what's it going to be like when I get older? And she lives life like she's going to live another 30 years or 40. Well, maybe she will, you know. It's like, it's very inspiring to understand that there are people that are 74 years old and still have the heart and the fight and the motivation and the ambition that they had when they were younger. And to me, that's super gratifying. It gave me something to look forward to over the next several years, and I hope it did for you as well. So for all you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, and of course to all you entrepreneurs and all you angel investors out there, we're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side.
Can you see by the dawn?
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.